Welcome to Zichu Daf Siman Mem Rabbi Avraham Goldar and today Masechet Baba Basra Daf Kuf Mem, the ninth parak Misha Meis. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, the Gemara says Pshita Merubin V'Nismatu. It's obvious that if there were initially many assets and they became inadequate because food increased in price or the assets lost value, Kvar Zachu Behen Yorshim, the heirs already acquired their share in the estate and the daughters cannot collect support from it. The Gemara asks Muatim Nisrabumai. If there were initially inadequate assets and they increase in value, what's the halacha? Do we say Bereshus Yorshim Kaimei, the assets stand in the possession of the heirs, meaning the sons, until the daughters actually collect their support, Hilchach Bereshus Yorshim Shabuach, therefore they improved in value in the heirs' possession, and the daughters cannot collect from the additional value, Odilma, Sukim Asalka Yorshim Ahacha, or perhaps the heirs are removed from the properties earmarked for the daughter's support and do not own the increased value. This is resolved from Rabbi Yochanan's ruling. Yesomim shekadmim v'machrim v'nechas muatim, orphans who acted first and sold property where there were inadequate assets, the sale is valid. This proves that property earmarked for the daughter's support remains in the son's possession. Point number two, Rabbi Yirmi asked Rabbi Abo, Amanaso ma'ushit ma'ait b'nechasim, does his widow reduce the property's value, meaning is his widow's right to support subtracted from the property's value in determining whether there are nechasim rubin? Or do we say, Kevin de Iwa Manasba Leisla, since if she would marry, she has no more claim to support, is not calculated into the estate's value since it's not fixed? The Gemara continues, if we assume her claim is not subtracted, Bas Ishto Maushet Ma'ar Benachasim, does his wife's daughter reduce the property's value since she receives support even if she marries? This refers to a commitment to support his wife's daughter from her previous marriage for a number of years. Or, since if the daughter would die, her right to support would end, even for her heirs, it's not subtracted from the estate. Finally, the Gemara asks, if this claim is not subtracted, would a Baal Chov's claim be subtracted? Do we say his claim exists even if he dies and his heirs would collect it? Or do we say since it lacks collection, it's not subtracted? These questions are not resolved. And point number three, the next mission states, Hiniach banim ubanus v'tumtum. If one left behind sons, daughters, and a tumtum, whose gender cannot be determined, then if there are nechasim rubim, hazacharim dochin also eats on the kevos, the males push him away to the females, meaning they prevent him from inheriting beyond the daughter's support, claiming he may be a female and only entitled to support. If there are nechasim muatim, where the daughters are supported and the sons do not inherit, and the kevos dochos also eats on zacharim, the females can push him away to the males, claiming he may be a male. The Gemara asks, when the first case says the sons push him towards the females, does this mean he collects support like a female, the lesser claim? But the Sefer of the Mishnah teaches that if one promises a monetary gift for his future son or daughter, then if the child is a tumtum, he receives nothing proving that a tumtum is a beria, a distinct creature, neither male nor female. Abai explains, Dochin oso ve'enuo, they push him away and he does not have anything even like a female. Rava says he does receive like a female, and the Sefer is Rav Shimon Gamliel who rules, a tumtum is a beria. So once again, the 3 points are, number one, the Gemara says, Pshita merubim nismatu, it's obvious that if there were initially many assets, and they became inadequate because food increased in price, or the assets lost value, kvar zachu behen yorshim, the heirs already acquired their share in the estate, and the daughters cannot collect support from it. The Gemara asks, Muatim nisrabumai, if there were initially inadequate assets, and they increase in value, what's the halacha? Do we say Bereshus Yorshim Kaimei, the assets stand in the possession of the heirs, meaning the sons, until the daughters actually collect their support, Hilchach Bereshus Yorshim Shabuach, therefore they improved in value in the heirs' possession, and the daughters cannot collect from the additional value, Odilma, Sukim Asalka Yorshim Ahacha, or perhaps the heirs are removed from the properties earmarked for the daughter's support and do not own the increased value. This is resolved from Rabbi Yochanan's ruling. Yesomim shekadmim v'machrim v'nechas muatim, orphans who acted first and sold property where there were inadequate assets, the sale is valid. This proves that property earmarked for the daughter's support remains in the son's possession. Point number two, Rabbi Yirmi asked Rabbi Abo, Amanaso ma'ushit ma'ait b'nechasim, does his widow reduce the property's value, meaning is his widow's right to support subtracted from the property's value in determining whether there are nechasim rubin? Or do we say Kevin de Iwa Manasba Leisla, since if she would marry, she has no more claim to support, is not calculated into the estate's value since it's not fixed? The Gemara continues, if we assume her claim is not subtracted, Bas Ishto Maushet Ma'ar Benachasim, does his wife's daughter reduce the property's value since she receives support even if she marries? This refers to a commitment to support his wife's daughter from her previous marriage for a number of years. Or, since if the daughter would die, her right to support would end, even for her heirs, it's not subtracted from the estate. Finally, the Gemara asks, if this claim is not subtracted, would a Baal Chov's claim be subtracted? Do we say his claim exists even if he dies and his heirs would collect it? Or do we say since it lacks collection, it's not subtracted? These questions are not resolved. And point number three, the next Mishnah states, Hiniach banim ubanus v'tumtum. If one left behind sons, daughters, and a tumtum, whose gender cannot be determined, then if there are nechasim rubim, hazacharim dochin also eitz on the kevos, the males push him away to the females, meaning they prevent him from inheriting beyond the daughter's support, claiming he may be a female and only entitled to support. If there are nechasim muatim, where the daughters are supported and the sons do not inherit, and the kevos dochos also eitz on zacharim, the females can push him away to the males, claiming he may be a male. The Gemara asks, when the first case says the sons push him towards the females, does this mean he collects support like a female, the lesser claim? But the Sefer of the Mishnah teaches that if one promises a monetary gift for his future son or daughter, then if the child is a tumtum, he receives nothing proving that a tumtum is a beria, a distinct creature, neither male nor female. Abai explains, Dochin oso ve'enu, they push him away and he does not have anything even like a female. Rava says he does receive like a female, and the Sefer is Rav Shimon Gamliel who rules, a tumtum is a beria. All right, so now we get our siman daf kuf mem, and our standard siman is a camera. So here goes. The photographer who uses camera to catch a shot of sons jumping for joy when their assets increase in value while their sisters look sad was able to capture the almana who reduced the property's value trying to comfort her child, the tumtum, who got pushed away by his brothers and sisters. Once again, slow motion. The photographer who uses camera, that must be one duff, kuf mem. The photographer who uses camera to catch a shot of sons jumping for joy when their assets increase in value while their sisters look sad, which reminds us, Gemara says, pshita merubim v'nisma'atu. It's obvious that if there were initially many assets and they became inadequate because food increased in price or the assets lost value, the heirs already acquired their share in the estate and the daughters cannot collect support from it. The Gemara asks, Mu'atim nisrabu mai, if there were initially inadequate assets and they increase in value, what is the halacha? Bershus yorshin kaimi? Do we say the assets stand in the possession of the heirs, meaning the sons, until the daughters actually collect their support? Hilchach bershus yorshin shabuach, therefore they improved in value in the heirs' possession, and the daughters cannot collect from the additional value, or perhaps the heirs are removed from the properties earmarked for the daughters' support and do not own the increased value. The Gemara concludes they remain in the heirs' possession. So the photographer who uses camera to catch a shot of sons jumping for joy when their assets increase in value while their sisters look sad was able to capture the almana who reduced the property's value, which reminds us, Rabbi Yirmi as Rabbi Avo, does an almana reduce the property's value? Meaning, is his almana's right to support subtracted from the property's value in determining whether there are nechas merubin? Or do we say, since if she would marry, she has no more claim to support, it's not calculated into the estate's value since it's not fixed? The Gemara continues with additional questions that are left unresolved. So the photographer who uses camera to catch a shot of sons jumping for joy when their assets increase in value while their sisters look sad was able to capture the almana who reduced the property's value, trying to comfort her child, the tumtum, who got pushed away by his brothers and sisters, which reminds us that tumtum can be pushed away by sons from their rights and by daughters from their rights for support. So once again, the photographer who uses camera to catch a shot of sons jumping with joy when their assets increase in value while their sisters look sad was able to capture the almana who reduced the property's value, trying to comfort her child, the tumtum, who got pushed away by his brothers and sisters. All right, so now it's time for four blabach hazara. Daf kuf lamed vav. So the simmer daf kuf lamed vav is a clue. So here goes. The basin who used the date and star is a clue. Clue? That must be more on daf kuf lamed vav. The basin who used the date and ashtar as a clue to determine when it took effect, Mahayom Lachar Misa, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that if one writes his properties to a son, but wants to retain the produce during his lifetime, Rabbi Yehuda says, Sarach Sheyichtov Mahayom Lachar Misa, he must write that the gift should take effect from today and after death. The Gemara explains that this indicates that the gufa, the principal, the land itself, is acquired by a son immediately, and the pera, the produce, is acquired only after he dies. Rabbi Yossi argues and says he does not have to write mehayom. Rabbi Yossi holds zmano shel shtar mochiach chulav. The shtar's date proves when it should take effect. There is no purpose in writing a date in the shtar unless he wants it to take effect from that time. So the Beis Din used the date in the shtar as a clue to determine when it took effect, mehayom lachar misa, tried to notify the father that even though his son sold the field, he would still get the whole field upon the untimely death of the son because kinyan aperos is kinyan aguf, which reminds us, the Mishnah taught that where a father gifted his son property from today and after death, such that the son owns the guf and the father retains the peros, that neither can unilaterally sell the land now because of the rights of the other. If the father sells it, the buyer enjoys his rights of the produce until the father dies. If the son sells it, the buyer has nothing until the father dies, when the son would inherit the land. Amoraim discussed the law if the son sold the property and died before the father. So the Beis Din used the Danish star as a clue to determine when it took effect, Mehayom L'Acher Misa, tried to notify the father that even though his son sold the field, he would still get the whole field upon the untimely death of the son, because Kinyan HaPeros is Kinyan HaGuf. But the father was already on his way to bring his Bikurim and recite the Bikurim Psukim, which reminds us, the Gemara asks if Yochanan and Reish Lakish already argued elsewhere about Kinyan Peros. If one sells his field for right to its produce, Rav Yochanan says, maybe Vikore, the buyer brings Bikurim and recites the Bikurim Psukim because his Kinyan Peros is sufficient to consider him the property's owner. Reish Lakish says he brings Bikurim but does not recite the Psukim because his Kinyan Peros is insufficient to consider him the owner. The Gemara explains that both arguments were necessary. Kuf Lamed Zayin, so the Simmer Duff Kuf Lamed Zayin is a closet. So here goes. The cunning Russia who hid in the closet. Closet? That must be on Duff Kuf Lamed Zayin. The cunning Russia who hid in the closet, after advising the man who received the land with instructions, Acharecha Laploni, to sell, which reminds us, it was taught in the Brice that if one says, Nachasai Lacha V'Acharecha Laploni, my properties are yours, and after you die, they go to Ploni, and the first recipient sold the property. Rebbe says the second recipient can take the properties from the buyers because the sale is void. Mishum Gamliel says, Ein L'Sheni El Mashashia Rishon, the second recipient has nothing but what the first recipient left for him. The sale is valid and nothing is left for the second person. According to Rabbi Yochanan, these Tanaim argue about whether or not Kinyan Peros is equal to Kinyan Aguf, which would enable the first recipient to sell the property. Reish Lakish disagrees. So the cunning Russia who hid in the closet after advising the man who received land with instructions, Acharecha Laploni, to sell, and didn't realize he would try to give it away with a Matna Shchimira, which doesn't work, which reminds us, Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha follows from Shimon Gamliel that the first recipient's sale is valid in the case of Acharecha Laploni. But Rabbi Shimon agrees that if he gave it away as a matna shchimira, a gift of a gravely ill person, it's not effective. Abai explained, matna shchimira lo kana el lachar misa. A shchimira's gift only takes effect after his death, and by then the after you were second recipient already preceded him by acquiring it when the first recipient died. So the cunning Russia who hid in the closet after advising the man who received the land with instructions, Acharecha Laploni, to sell, and didn't realize he would try to give it away with a matna shchimira, which doesn't work, had a good laugh when he overheard a person being given a cow, almanach zlachzir, bimakdishet, which reminds us, Rav quoted Rav Nachman saying that if one gave another a shor, on condition that he returns it, and the recipient was makdishet and then returned it, arzim mukta shemuchzir, it's both consecrated and returned. It's being made hektish does not detract from his returning it. Rava asked Rav Nachman, but what did he return to him? He can't use it. Rav Nachman replied, but what does he remove from him? The ox was physically returned. The Gemara concludes that if he said, on condition that you return it, this returning is sufficient. But if he said, on condition that you return it to me, he was telling him to return something useful to him. Daf Kuf Lamed Ches, so the Simmer Daf Kuf Lamed Ches is based on Kelach, a stock, and we use a Maror stock. So here goes. After the Maror farmer wrote all of his assets, including his horseradish stocks, that must be Rendaf Kuf Lamed Ches, Maror stocks. After the Maror farmer wrote all of his assets, including his horseradish stocks, to a friend, who was quiet at first and then protested that he didn't want them, which reminds us, it was taught in Bryce that if one writes all his assets to someone, which included slaves, and the recipient said, I don't want them, the Tanakhama says that if the second master is a Kohen, the slaves may eat truma because the gift took effect. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says his protest voids the gift, and the first owner's heirs inherit the slaves. They argue Shazikolo al Yadei Acher, where he transferred it to him through another person who acquired it on the recipient's behalf, and the recipient was initially silent and later protested. The Tanakhama holds that his initial silence proves he wanted it. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds, Hochiach Sofal Tchilaso. His eventual protest proves the intent of his initial silence. He never wanted it and was initially silent because he reasoned, as long as they did not reach my hand, why should I protest? So after the Maror farmer wrote all of his assets, including his horseradish stocks, to a friend who was quiet at first and then protested that he didn't want them, he brought a dish of Maror stocks to his dying father, who was giving instructions to give 200 zuz to Reuven, and after him 300 to Shimon, and after him 400 to Levi, which reminds us, the Gemara discusses when the order in a Shchimira's gift indicates the recipients acquire sequentially. If he said, give 200 zuz to Ploni, and after him 300 to Ploni, and after him 400 to Ploni, then we do say, kol kodem ashar zocha. Whoever comes early in the shtar acquires earlier, because this expression indicates that he wants the gifts to be conveyed sequentially. Therefore, if someone produces a shtar that the shchimira owed him money, gova mina acharon, he collects the entire amount from the last recipient. If his gift is not enough to cover the debt, gova mishalafana, he collects the remainder from the recipient before him, and so on. So after the Maror farmer wrote all of his assets, including his horseradish stocks, to a friend who was quiet at first and then protested that he didn't want them, he brought a dish of Maror stocks to his dying father, who was giving instructions to give 200 zuz to Reuven, and after him 300 to Shimon, and after him 400 to Levi, while Adim were writing down his father's claim that Ploni owed him money, even though they didn't know if it was true, which reminds us, it was taught in a braisa that if a shchemira said, Ploni owes me a mana, Rabbi Meir says that Edim Kosim Afopisha Ein Makirim. The Edim may record the claim even though they do not recognize whether the claim is true. Therefore, when his heir presents this document to collect the debt, Tzarkel Haviraya, he must bring proof to the claim since it was not initially investigated. The Chachamim say the Edim cannot record the claim before determining that it's true. Therefore, this document is sufficient proof for the claim. The Gemara teaches in the Machlokes is based on the question whether there's a concern of based in towing, based in erring to allow collection of the document without further proof. Daf Kuf Lamedtes. So the Simur Daf Kuf Lamedtes is a blood clot. So here goes. The cardiologist told the man with a blood clot, blood clot? That must be more than Daf Kuf Lamedtes. The cardiologist told the man with a blood clot who just made a wedding that if he doesn't take care of himself, the younger son would have to make their wedding from his estate, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, Hiniach banim gadoim ukatanim. If the father left older and younger sons, the older sons are not supported with clothing from the undivided estate, and the younger sons are not fed from the estate, since either would disproportionately deplete the estate. Instead, they divide it equally. If the older sons married and funded the expenses from the estate, the younger ones may also marry using money from the estate. If the younger sons say, we'll marry the same way you married, we don't listen to them. Rather, whatever the father gave the older son to marry, he gave, and the younger sons are not entitled to receive the same. The Gemara clarifies that this latter case was when the older brothers received the monies when the father was still alive, and therefore the monies were considered a gift. So the cardiologist told the man with a blood clot who just made a wedding that if he doesn't take care of himself, his younger sons would have to make their wedding from his estate, while the newlywed would be fine because he's a yorish and a lokeach in his wife's possessions, which reminds us, Rava was asked, if a woman borrowed money without a shtar and used it, and she got married so her husband took possession of her assets, ba'al lokeach have a yorish have, is a husband considered a buyer or an heir of these assets? A mil v'al pen, an oral loan, cannot be collected from those who purchase property from the borrower, but it is collected from an heir. Rav Ashi concludes that the rabbis treat the husband as either a yorish or a lokeach, v'heked detavalei avdilei, and whichever was better for him, they considered him. So the cardiologist told the man with a blood clot who just made a wedding that if he doesn't take care of himself, his younger sons would have to make their wedding from his estate, while the newlywed would be fine because he's a yorish and a lokeach in his wife's possessions, told his father that the other boys would end up begging for food while they support their sisters, which reminds us, the ninth parak begins, Misha meis v'niach banim ubanos. If one died and left behind sons and daughters, bezman shenachasim urubim, where the property is abundant, the sons inherited and the daughters are supported from it. Nachasim u'atim, but if the property is inadequate, the daughters are supported and the sons go begging at the doors. Admon objects, because I'm a male, I lose. Rather, they're supported together until the estate runs out. Rav Shimon Gamliel agrees with Admon. All right, so now it's time to conclude our pop quiz of 10 questions. Number one, which stuff to discuss what the din is if there were initially inadequate assets in an estate and they increase in value, whether the assets are in the possession of the heirs, that's on duff? Kuf ma'am. Okay, number two, which stuff to discuss what the din is when sons or daughters are in an estate with nechasim rubin or nechasim mu'atin, that's on duff? Kuf lamates. Good number three, which stuff? Do we have a case where the son who owns the land's peros tries to sell the land and the issue of kinyan peros, kinyan aguf, that's on duff? Kuf lamadvav. Good number four, which stuff do you want a tumtum can be pushed away by sons from their rights and by daughters from their rights for support, that's on duff? Kuf ma'am. Good number five, which stuff do you discuss one claiming he has children to exempt his wife from yibum and claiming gerashti est ishti, that's on duff? Kuf Lamedal. Good number six. Which stuff do you have a case of Matana Amanas Lachzir, where the recipient was Makdish the gift and then returned it? That's on duff. Kuf Lamed Zayin. Good number seven. Which stuff do you have a question if a widow's right to support subtracted from the property's value in determining whether there are Nachasim Rubin? That's on duff. Kuf Mem. Good number 8. Which stuff do you learn? If a Shemira said, write and give a mana to Pony, and he died before it was done, we do not carry out his instructions. That's on Duff. Kuf Lamed Hey. Good number 9. Which stuff do we discuss when younger siblings receive the same marriage funding that older siblings received? That's on Duff. Kuf Lamed Tes. Good. Number 10. Which stuff do we discuss if Aiden can record a Shemira's claim without knowing its veracity, or are we Hoshesh based on towing? That's on Duff. Kuf Lamed Ches. Excellent. That concludes today's shir. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldar from Zichu, wishing you a great day and great learning.